Before we dive in, two things. First, thank you. Listeners like you are why we do this. Our team works hard on every episode to ensure we bring you the best content possible. Second, it's a gift-giving time of year. People ask us all the time, what's your setup or what's your favorite gear? We put all of our favorites together in our new Generation Leader gift guide. Find recommendations for those hard to buy for people on your list and get them something great this year. Find the gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift and we'll keep this up to date all year round. All right, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the New Generation Leader Podcast. We're giving you the tools you need to lead in the digital world. Ready to reach your true potential? This is the New Generation Leader Podcast.
Hi, my name is Jim Lee. I grew up in the Los Angeles area with parents that immigrated to the United States in the early 70s. I was born in Korea, but came when I was 3 months old, and I've lived in California my whole life.
My name is Aaron Lee. I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic in Richmond, Virginia. When I was a child, I only knew two Asians, one on my Little League team and one at school. It wasn't until I met Jim later in my career that I began to understand those distinctions in real life.
One of the things that was hard for me to do is to take my personal experiences and see them objectively. As a Korean that grew up in America, my whole life is full of Asian and Western biases that have created cultural differences that are hard for me to identify. By recognizing where those lines are, we hope to navigate through them intentionally and with less conflict and more collaboration.
We know our stories and our biases aren't unique. And throughout our years of coaching, we've found it quite liberating for ourselves and many others to see those biases more explicitly so that we can move more intentionally towards the goals we want to achieve. This is the New Generation Leader Allyship Channel. Jim, you've told me a number of stories from throughout your career. What's an experience that you had at some point in your career that you look back on and say, I really learned something about myself in that moment?
Yeah, I remember late in my early career. So this would be about maybe 6 years into my career. I was a regional manager for an office, and the general manager brought me into his office, and he had some great ideas. He was always like thinking of ways to improve the team, thinking of new ways to kind of roll out marketing campaigns and help rally the sales force. And I remember sitting at his desk, at a big desk, and he's a pretty big intimidating guy, former football player for the Colorado Buffaloes. And he would look at me, thought things through, and I really respected him. And so he would come up with an idea, say, hey, I got a great idea for this campaign. This is what we should do. You know, I think this would be a great way. I think this is an awesome process that I think we should roll out to the team. And I'd be like, awesome, great, I'll take it and I'll run with it. And what I realized at the moment was that I was such a good compliance, want to do what my manager says, and I'm going to knock the socks out of it, just doing it his way. What surprised me was after doing that for a while, he challenged me. He goes, gosh darn it, that's not what I wanted to hear from you. And it just like totally shocked me because like, why wouldn't he? This was a great idea. You thought it through. You have so much more experience than I. And what he said was like, hey, I brought you in from the non-outside of this industry. And the reason why I brought you in is because in the interviewing stages, you gave me some great ideas. And I have not seen you implement any one of those ideas. And I said, well, you come up with ideas already. Like, who am I to come up with my own ideas when you, as a general manager, having been in this business for like 25 years, have so much more competency and credibility on this, like, what am I? And he said, but then that means that you're useless to me. I could have hired anybody that can execute the orders that I'm telling you to do. But what I wanted to do was inspire you to think of a solution, but I wanted to give you an idea to kind of think outside the box of what we're doing now. And I was like, oh, okay. And I remember I had the biggest smile at the moment, because for once I felt like I had a job and it was my job and my responsibility to do things. But this was the first manager that trusted me to say, hey, I want you to call the shots. Mm-hmm. I gave you something as a guideline, but how will you execute something? Think of something better.
And you're an ideas guy. You come up with ideas, your creative thinking, you are looking at opportunities and possibilities naturally. So what was it going on in your mind that was closing you off to those ideas and being deferential to your boss?
Yeah, I think for most Asians, they have this imprint in your head. It's almost like hard wiring, but it's really software if you think about it. So for example, I use the analogy like, you know, you're an iPhone user, I could be an Android user, and in it are just hardware that runs native software. I think we all have that. But on top of it is like an app. And I think as kids, for most Asians, there's this Asian app that's on my phone that runs things a certain way. And what really we're imprinted in our first 5 years before you go into kindergarten is the parents' way is the only way. Like they have authority because in Asian culture, it's a very hierarchical system. And so whatever the adult says or whatever someone that's older than you says or someone that has authority over you says is what you do explicitly without question. And the reason why at five things kind of change is because I start seeing other people questioning or proposing or countering what other people do because that's more Western culture. But when I try to practice that in my home, it always came back with why? Or I told you what to do. Why don't you just do it the way I told you to do? And so I think my creative mindset when it comes to authority is a program that runs that says, no, you can't do that. My whole career, it was one of those things like I had a job and I would do it the way they told me to do it. And the times that I had creativity was within this sandbox that I felt like it was safe to do. But anything that I felt was counter or I would do differently than what our manager says or any of my my teachers said, like I just didn't feel like I can either get clarity on things. I was thinking something different. I couldn't collaborate for something to be able to work with the manager or with my boss and say, hey, I have some information that seems a little different when it, with the boots on the ground. And so therefore, like I'd like to share some other ideas in that way. And so the reality of me having any authority to be able to make decisions was really taken away.
When you look back over all of your life, one of my favorite quotes is that it's who we are at the very beginning that really shapes who we become. So when you go back, you talked a little bit about that early childhood, the app that's imprinted. What kind of experiences did you have as a young child that for you set that in motion to then respond and react to your boss in that way?
Yeah. So I think the app, like, for example, is on my life, right? It's the user interface of how I exchange and work with the people in my life. And so, like, specifically, I remember that there were times when, like, at home that I used to mow the lawn, I remember. And I did it at such a young age. And I would mow the lawn. And I would mow the lawn the way my dad showed me how to do it. But I came up with a different way. I thought that would be better, faster, definitely a lot more efficient. And I could get through my chores faster. I remember I started it differently. And what it was is you would have the grass edge trimmer and we would do that last. I said, what if we did it first instead? And the reason why I thought it would be better was because when you trim the edges, I don't have to cut as much lawn later. And so therefore, I'm going to empty the bin a little bit less. And I just thought that'd be great. But I think partly because, again, my father having just grown up in a hierarchical system. And there's also this area where, like a lot of immigrants, they don't have margin for error. And if something isn't tested or tried, then there's a possibility of financial loss or time loss. And for a lot of immigrants, like time is very expensive because they don't have a lot of that time. And so I remember like I went out, I started with the trimmer and then my dad came out and I asked him, what am I doing? I was like, I'm trimming first. And he goes, you're supposed to be mowing first. And I remember I was trying to like explain that. I think partly as like a 5 or 7 year old, that wasn't something I could articulately say. Language barrier also, like my dad not speaking English as well as I did and what I wanted to do. And it was just squashed. And I remember like I had the responsibility to mow the lawn, but I didn't have the decision-making ability to do what I felt like was best. Yeah, it was just very disempowering. But again, like that coupled with how I even brushed my teeth or how I would, I remember even at a young age where I'd take showers, like there was the proper way to take showers, which incidentally, I still pretty much follow to today. Because now it's just ingrained and it's comfortable and I don't feel as clean if I don't, per se, that I just do. That ability that over and over again throughout my childhood, when I would go back and try to offer a different way to do things, my dad said, no, just do it this way.
When you think about that imprint on you as a child, and then you go from the perspective of your manager, what would you say? What would you teach? How would you impart that proactively, that lesson that your manager ultimately lived out in calling a timeout and saying, Jim, here's what I need from you. And let me be explicit in that way. How would you build a bridge and set other managers up to be able to draw that out of the people they're leading who maybe have, from an Asian upbringing and perspective, a similar life experience, childhood experience? That's their own tendency.
Yeah, I think what was at that moment, I think culturally appropriate that my manager did was almost rebuke me because I respond well to that in a hierarchy system. But what was interesting was like, it was the challenge that was to elevate me, not necessarily the challenge for me to like pay attention and listen. But then instead of like, I felt like it was disempowering me in a way. Yes, telling the person that's possibly Asian that has a hard time like taking ownership of something or taking agency of something would be to say, hey, time out. This is what I'm asking for you to do. I want to give you ownership. This is your role and responsibility. I gave it to you. Whereas I think in Asian culture, like this is your responsibility, but you don't have control. There is a way of doing things. And so just knowing that you are going to provide a little bit of vision and some idea sparking or inspiration for them to look at, but also challenging them not to do it exactly the same way and provide maybe benchmarks or structures or ways to allow them to feel like there's a safe sandbox to play in would probably be very helpful. And you have to do that more explicitly. So when I look back at what my GM said, was like, hey, time out. This is not what I hired you for. Like, this is what I saw in you, and this is what you're not doing. And sharing those two perspectives for me to then consciously see, because I was unconsciously blind to that, right? Like, I thought I was doing everything I was told to do, and that was the good thing, because that's what I was raised to do. But helping to share that disparity, and then from there, bring the ownership, say, hey, it's your job to fill that gap. This is what I hired you for. That's a strength. That's something that I wanted. And re-empowering the person to be able to use what they see as an asset that was told previously that maybe their parents said it's a liability is one of those things that can explicitly help Asians to probably take the lead more consciously.
If you're anything like me, keeping up with all the people you know is hard. I forgot Tom's birthday. I had a meeting in town and forgot Jamie lives here now. Who was that strategic planner I met last year? Clay is a game changer for me. It puts all of my connections, contacts, text messages, LinkedIn connections, all in one place, reminding me about what and who is most important. Then, every morning, Clay's AI engine reminds me, birthdays, who I should reconnect with, and lets me take notes so I remember important details. Safe, secure, and thoughtful. Clay, the AI-powered system for cultivating amazing personal and professional relationships. Try Clay for free today at newgenerationleader.fm/clay. You use a broker for your health insurance and benefits. Why not use a broker for your technology? Keeping up with the latest advances in technology can be a challenge. It frustrates me so much trying to keep up. Then you pick the technology, and now you have the headache of working with a pushy salesperson from multiple companies, trying to compare the available features, who's going to give you the best deal. It's maddening. But what if you could add a trusted technology advisor to your team? The power of a 12-time Inc. 5000 honoree and leverage their purchasing power to get the best possible deal on your video conferencing, your phones, internet access, network security, and every other technology need you have. That's the power of Sandler Partners. Our friends at Sandler are offering our listeners a 15-minute conversation. No pressure, explore your needs, and see if it's a good match. If they can't add value to your technology spending, after 15 minutes, they'll let you know. Explore your tech spending at newgenerationleader.fm/Sandler. You and I can have these conversations maybe more openly and honestly because of trust, time, we've gotten to that place. But I know in a lot of settings I have been in where there's another culture represented, we've also seen this with a number of clients, when as a manager or a leader, the way that we think is so deeply programmed in our minds, in a position of leadership or authority or management, there can be something holding us back that we feel uncomfortable. It's not something we know. We're not familiar with it. I don't have a background maybe in working alongside somebody who has a particular cultural background or experience that's different than mine. And we've seen that maybe a manager in this kind of situation wouldn't have the, call it gumption, to call out the disparity for you and call you up to what he had seen as your true potential. So thinking about it from that perspective, what would have happened if your manager had not approached you in that way? What would you have missed out on if your manager had played it safe, maybe ultimately cut you loose and said, well, I can go hire somebody else. Jim's not doing what I expected, and not told the truth.
Great question. Because one of the things that I know and I've seen, not only just my colleagues, but I think I've also lived in my early career, like my first 3 years, was where very high achieving Asians that tend to work on more of a meritocracy type of mindset. And by the way, Asian culture is all about meritocracy, right? Like you get the good grades, you get the job, like you work hard, you get the money, you earn the job. And because of that, like what I found is if Asians don't feel like they're getting what they think they would because of how they measure themselves purely on meritocracy, a lot of them leave. And about 5 to 6 years is that itch happens. And by the 7th year, you'll see statistically a lot of Asians that haven't gotten promoted, they turn over. And so I work with a lot of first generation Asians, ones that have probably on the more extreme side, that you see this tendency to happen where maybe they came to the States for college, they got their college degree, they got their first job, and they look amazing because like on paper, they have all the promises of an amazing career. But I think what most non-Asians do is see the statistics the way they want to interpret it, because like compare this to a non-Asian and where their academics was not as high, or maybe the STEM approach, a course of classes, were not as high. Because Asians, again, they over index on the academic side of things, but not the soft relational skill sets. When those challenging times come where they're not seeing the results or getting the feedback on their year-end reviews as they thought they would, that software code says, well, you're not working hard enough. You got to work harder. And then they see these people that might not be performing as well in their colleagues, or they don't have the same pedigree of academia, and they're getting promoted. They see that as favoritism. And so then they're like, oh, forget it. I have no future here at this company. And then so they walk away. And I think that's where like managers that I've been really working with, and I say, hey, if the numbers don't add up, you've hired someone with high potential, they're not performing as you thought they would, it could be the metrics that you're looking at are based on Western values. And there's a disparity in terms from the Asian values that your Asian employee is working on, that they're indexing on other values that they thought you would deem as being leadership potential. And so they may be just following the crowd. They may not seem like they're a thought leader. They may not be contributing to the team meetings with their own ideas. And so therefore, you don't feel like they're qualified to maybe try new roles or try to test out new opportunities to demonstrate leadership, because they are rarely raising their hand. But that is what Asians feel like is being respectful, because their software is telling them, I will do whatever I say. They don't participate in meetings and share unless you call upon them. But a lot of Asians will feel like most Americans in team meetings are wasting time with ideas that don't pan out. And they're just talking with verbal diarrhea is literally what they say. But those are the people that tend to get promoted. And so they can't reconcile that. Like, why is that happening? Because they were told never to speak up or have a contrary difference of ideas. So when you see somebody else in the team that is speaking up, sharing their ideas that are contradicting the manager, well, they got promoted. They must have a personal relationship outside. Oh, yeah, they do have a personal relationship outside than they think, because that person's always in the manager's office. They're having coffee together. They're having lunch. They're doing non-work productive things, which is Western society way of building trust and engaging and having the opportunity to know somebody besides their work. It's their full self. But Asians see that as like, well, that must have been brown nosing because they're not being productive and working hard. So again, Asians going back to like meritocracy, I'm just going to work harder. I did 100%, must not be good enough. I'm going to do 102%. I'm going to do 103%. And then by the third or fourth year, it's not reflecting to what it is. They'll bounce out because in their perspective, it seems like there has to be some favoritism or there's something, some prejudice against Asians. And so therefore, like they're not promotable or not valued in the company.
We've coached and spent time with a number of Asian leaders. And so we've talked about this dynamic with them. We've talked about this dynamic behind the scenes. We've met and interacted with leaders in other contexts. I think for me, I look at my own experiences and think I, in some ways, played both sides. So I'm not Asian, but I did look with some of those very same thoughts that you were just describing. They're brown nosing. They're working with their way up. I'm working way harder. Why am I not being promoted? And so in all of this discussion, our goal is not to say Western is a box, Asian is a box. As you've described, Asian would be a very large box for all of the different variations. The key is to understand for ourselves what's truly going on. But in the words of Ted Lasso, be curious enough into the lives and stories of those we're working with to recognize what might be different in your story than in my story. Why is it happening that you work or lead or manage or make decisions or ideate or don't ideate in your own way? Why is that happening in that way? And be curious enough to ask questions, dialogue, and discuss, and seek to make the leaders around us better, make our team members better as we bring each other up along the journey.
Yeah, I don't think this is a unilateral challenge that all Asians face, because people are different. But in that bell curve, it tends to be very Asian heavy in those different dynamics. And of course, I've seen them in non-Asian cultures as well. And so one of the things that I share with leaders is Asians can be a very good workforce for managers to learn how to lead all the different people on your table. And the ones that are hardest to lead tend to be the quietest to lead. But if you can, as a leader, realize that Asians are tough, but they're stretching you and they're growing your leadership skills to be able to hear the thoughts and understand those that don't feel like they have a voice, then you really can take the benefits of all the diversity and some of those challenging areas that may grow and stretch you as a leader to really work in the opportunity to see the benefits of it and how great your team can actually grow by fine-tuning and being curious, asking questions, understanding why the picture doesn't seem to fit right if some of those observations don't tend to make sense. But I think it's always easier when we're too busy, we have too much going on, and we have our own preferences and our own way of doing things, that we only value other people that look like us or maybe act like us or do things like us, that you miss out on a whole spectrum of people that are different that can contribute to the situation. So it's like this saying that I talk to people, like, if there's a potluck and everybody brings KFC, person that brings Domino Pizza could seem like the hero because they bring an opportunity to have something different than what everybody is already contributing.
If you were to walk in to that same position, same environment with what you know about yourself now, what would the early days look like that would be different now than how it actually played out in your life?
Well, I could even go back to maybe two or three positions before that, and I would have engaged in conversation. So I think this idea of being curious has to go both ways. But I think in the majority culture where you're asking for people to bring in their thought, just realizing just because it's majority isn't ubiquitous with everybody. and me maybe learning and not treating everybody in authority also the same way could help me to maybe engage in spending more time in my manager's office, not just talking about my work, but talking about the weekend. Being in my manager's office and having conversations to be interested in them, not just making myself interesting by the performance numbers or the work that I'm doing. And I think in greater detail, if I were to go back in time, it's just, yes, I got to work hard, but it's maybe not trying to fit for 100% or 110% on just the meritocracy areas, but also realizing it's okay to get a 90, which most Asians call that an Asian F, you know, an A minus is an Asian F. But hey, like 85%, 90% is good if I have the balance of also the personal relationships. And I'm also growing the relationships of the influence of the people around me. But because Asian culture tends to be very individualistic and meritocracy-wise, I'm more about individual contributorship rather than bringing everybody in with my stakeholders along the way. And so I can see now how before I might have been a little bit of a bully to some of my support staff or some of the techs on the field that weren't executing the way I needed it to be done because I was just about using them to get to my goal. But more so, how do I use the project or the deal that we were executing on as an opportunity to myself even understand other people and get to know them so they can bring their best and not just create conformity and have them do things my way, but understand like, hey, how could I have crafted this better? So all of them could have brought something to the table and made it even better in that way. And then share those stories to my manager to display that I am not just a leader that can execute, but I'm a leader that other people want to work with and other people want to follow. So that when it comes to getting promoted, this is the part that most Asians don't see is that having a gregarious and a healthy conversation around the table, kind of like a dinner table and family, will look more westernized where there's exchange of conversations versus most Asian cultures in the dinner table is very quiet. You're just eating in a way. And you have your heads down, you're just eating. But it's not just my manager, but my boss's boss wants a healthy family too. If he's going to bring me up, he wants to make sure all the kids are happy together. And it's, so it's not just performance related, but my manager is going to be asked, like, who do you want to promote? Well, what do you guys think about Jim? It's like, oh yeah, Jim's great because they know me personally because I've taken the time to build those relationships versus Jim, I know his performance. He's really good at executing, but nobody wants to work with him. And I don't want to promote him because I don't want that one guy on my team that comes off as the know-it-all. He does everything perfectly and tends to distance himself from those that may not perform as well.
Back on episode 35, my friend Brian joined me. And we talked about the startup phase and how a lot of times we see the success, but we don't see the journey. So I appreciate the fact that you're opening up what has ultimately been your success as a leader, but taking us back through your journey so that we can see the ingredients, what's happening behind the scenes along the journey for us to unpack. What are those dynamics happening? How can we make all of our organizations and our leadership stronger, healthier, more effective, and truly build bridges? So I'm excited about the other stories I know come from your background and experience that we will have a chance to talk about on upcoming episodes and also begin to invite other voices to this table and have conversations with other leaders about their own experiences and talk about how we can continue to build bridges, be allies for each other, and recognize none of us can stay grounded where we started. We have to work to seek understanding in each other.
Yeah, great question. And I think there's a dearth that available for most Asians just because there's so few Asians in higher leadership type of roles. And I found that most of them that do get there bump their head along the way and maybe learned some skill sets or had some innate personality traits that might have just been a little bit more about being rebellious, possibly kind of paving their own road. But in either case, it's both what I would say unconscious behavior. And I think what was important for me is that even though I've been able to scale myself to that level, it still was, in a way, unconscious behavior. But it wasn't until I was asked by other Asians in 2019 to say, hey, like, we're kind of bumping our head on this, what they call an Asian leadership ceiling. And you're doing a lot of work to help executives in general through coaching. Is there a way that you can actually apply that for Asians specifically? And I thought about it, and my whole like management life kind of flashed before my eyes in a way. And I remembered that key moment that we talked about today when my GM empowered me to take more ownership of my life. And so I said, yeah, but it's not as much of me just telling them to take ownership. What I had to do was kind of peel back a lot of the layers of different apps on top of apps on top of apps. And some of those apps look like, well, it's the corporate culture. It's how they're interpreting corporate culture with like through an Asian lens. And then on top of that is a family structure of like, maybe like I have to obey because I don't want to lose my job because I don't want to shame my family if I get fired. And then there's another layer of another app, like as a dad, like they want to be the good dad. So they always bring home the bacon, like all these different layers that are on top of that, that have to be filtered through to eventually for them to see what was their moment of imprintment and how is that imprinted? Because it all gets imprinted in different ways through different experiences. Like I said, I have the lawn mowing experience. But when you have that ability to understand and deconstruct yourself and then rebuild yourself more intentionally so that your Asian culture is an intentional choice that you make to build a bridge with maybe your own family or other people that speak that cultural language, but also realizing that there is maybe the American life that I've been used to or like Western ways of doing things that I've been surrounded by. I've been living in, so I've seen it done and I understand how it's practiced by other people, but then having the opportunity to say, how do I incorporate that in my life and truly evaluate, am I breaking rules? Am I being insubordinate? Am I applicationally at this moment doing things that I shouldn't be doing? Or are they in the paradigm and the situation that I'm in, realizing that it's a self-limiting belief that and therefore, it's an inhibition to apply it in this area where it's okay, because I've been totally told in my past, this isn't that I can't do those. So it's decoupling the behavior with the background and the context of the situation. And it takes time. These are lifelong imprints and practices that just go on and be done unconsciously. So I walk participants through, it's a 4-month program initially, and then another 5 months afterwards, like how do you lead in that way? But helping them to start seeing themselves more objectively and giving them the time to start practicing these skill sets in a safe space so that they're just not autopiloting unconsciously, but we're making these conscious activities that they're able to lead these in a way that's coached along a system so that they can be competent at doing that, even though they feel like they're incompetent because it's a very different skill, right? So I'm right-handed. I know you're left-handed, right? So I think there's a great observation here. Like if I'm always doing things maybe the Asian way because it's right-handed for me and I'm constantly interacting with you, assuming you're right-handed, we're going to have a lot of conflict when it comes to how things are executed. But if I know how to use my left hand, it feels uncomfortable. But I know it's going to be more welcome that way, then I got to learn to be a little bit more left-handed and learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Like I have to learn like, hey, doing things in a more Western way, it feels uncomfortable. It feels weird, but that's okay because I'm just not used to it. And just like my left hand, if I do things over and over again, I can get better at it. It may not feel as natural because I'm right-handed, but I will be a lot more competent in the relational aspect of things versus just the execution things, which right-handed I'm really great at. So a lot of times this journey we take with Asians in this way, is say, hey, you can wait for them to cross the bridge and come over to you to be an ally. But since you have both hands and you've experienced both sides and you have the ability to do both, why don't you take the first step? And I charge them, like, if you want a different outcome, you have to do something different. So why don't you bring two hands to the table, both hands on this table, and engage in a way that allows us to be curious and present things and say, and being authentic. I tell a lot of my participants, you have to have a conversation with your manager and say, hey, this is what I'm learning. This is what I'm seeing about myself. It's very left-handed for me to do this, but I want you to see that I'm trying and I'm willing to do this. Can you give me feedback? And that's also hard for a lot of Asians, because as simple as that sounds in Western culture, like me going to someone, I'm going to do things differently. I'm going to be a little bit less on the performance side. Those are two things that are hard. The third thing is you're asking for feedback, which a lot of times in Asian culture, it's harsh critique. Like you go and again, you get that 90%. They don't say, yay, good job, you got 90%. They're like, hey, what was the one problem that you got wrong? Like, why did you get that wrong? And so that's like some software imprinting that say, hey, I want you to provide me feedback, but I really have to say, hey, I want you to give me growth opportunities so that I can become better, right? Might be a better way of phrasing things. But that in itself, right, it allows the Asians to start creating the bridge. It's kind of coming over a little bit closer and closer over a period of time. But I think when managers see that you're trying to do something different and let them know like, hey, I'm doing this for the purpose of being a lot more seen and exhibiting things that you're looking for, then they'll actually appreciate that and see that as a leadership goal from a Western perspective.
Well, thanks for sharing story, experience, background on your imprint. Our encouragement to you is start reflecting on your own imprint. What is it that makes you you? And what is it about your story, your experience, your life, your family, all of those components of your life that have made an imprint on you? Start reflecting on that, what that means, and how that plays out into how you lead. We'll continue this discussion and dialogue. I know you have plenty more stories from your career, insights and learning, and we'll continue to dive into those as we continue the Allyship channel on the New Generation Leader podcast. Download the show notes and subscribe at newgenerationleader.fm. Thanks, Jim. Look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks for listening to the New Generation Leader podcast. Subscribe today on your podcasting platform. Download the show notes and unlock your true leadership potential at newgenerationleader.fm. Thanks for listening today, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.
Thanks again for listening to today's show. Don't forget to check out the New Generation Leader gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift. Thanks to Brian, Jim, Jay, and the team behind the scenes. We'll see you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.